Mr. Boy in Reel 14, we were talking about when you had moved into Germany and you'd been put out in a sort of outpost in a barn with a Bren gun, and this German officer had stood up in this undergrowth in front of you.
He had his bloody gun in it, and he picked him up, and he looked as if he was looking straight down my binoculars. We were virtually looking at one another, and you hear this, your heart stops and the rest of it, and you dare breathe, and you dare move the binoculars in case they give a flash of light or whatever. So then we stood for seconds looking at one another, and then as fast as he appeared, he disappeared. And I thought, the thought goes through your mind, has he seen us? Do they know where we are or whatever? And a few minutes after that, we heard a noise at the back. And it was Hutchins again. It was Pinky. He'd come and wanted to know if there was anything going on. And I told him, and he said, "Oh, well, no, that's such a right." He crawled back along the ditch and the rest of it. I was glad to get out of there, quite frankly, because I thought any minute this lot's going to come through this, across this field. But they didn't. That's heart-stopping, to say the very least. The escarpment was cleared eventually. I think the infantry had to go in and wait them out because there was nothing we could do.
What, you couldn't get up at all?
No, it was rocky and
too steep.
It was a difficult terrain to go up, but then we just sort of pulled out. But that was a bit hard stopping that one. And another time, we were laid up again in another big barn, and all the tanks were lined up in the field. We'd rested there, I think, for a day or so. And this barn had enormous big doors that were partly open. And there was a strange noise, really strange. And I turned around and looked at the open doors, and lots of wood were flying off the top of it. A German fighter went straight across the road, firing at the troops on the roadway. So we shot out of this barn a bit quick and dived up to the tanks to get the Bren guns, but they made one more pass, but disappeared. But yeah, great chance we were coming off the top of this barn door, followed by this fighter. I'm not sure if I think it was, but a bit cheesy. He hit some of the convoy, I think, on the road. They scattered into the ditch and whatever they could get. So. But that was about the last real fighter sort of involvement I remember. They used to be buzzing about, but they were very cautious, I should think, because the air superiority was so great.
Did you bump any tanks, or had they been dealt with by the Tigers or whatever's, or had they been dealt with by...
There were some skills we did them, and I think they must have... We cleared two or three within it. I can't remember firing a Tiger. And it wasn't for the lack of looking for them, but they were there. They fired and then pulled back into some sort of cover, hoping that... The biggest fear, I think, for the Tigers was from above. So all you could do was try and contain them in an area and then let the typhoons sort of tear off. Panthers were about, but a lot was from foot patrols like these. Later on the Dortmund Ems Canal, we had to patrol that. And for some reason, Len Harkins and I were talking to Roy a recent time, and he doesn't remember. He wasn't with us for some strange reason. We went on this patrol down to the patrol.
A foot patrol, or a tank in your tank.
Yeah, and we passing down the path towards it, there was a house in front of us, about 600-800 yards away. And as we got towards it, these characters came down the side and loosed off some of these bazookas. One hit the ground in front of us, and the other one flew over the top of the turret. And then they disappeared. They must have run around the back. So we fired delayed HE, which would take it through the wall before it exploded. We loosed off a fair bit on that, and evidently generated a fair number of casualties from them. But when they were captured, and their helicopters, I think, when they picked them up, they were Hungarian. A lot of Hungarian troops. And they come over on a float and pontoon type, but they'd even found that eventually. So these are the things that sort of popped up in a fairly regular sort of interval.
Anything else?
Nothing major. A person, of course.
What do you remember of that? You didn't go in it, did you?
No, we didn't. We were down the side of it, the right hand side of it. Again, making for a bridge. We were stopped because the car had come out with a white flag. It came over on the radio that off to the left was this camp that held political prisoners that they'd been unable to feed because of the transport getting shot up and one thing or another. You could smell it 3 miles away. The smell of death is quite unique. It's something that you recognise almost instantly. But the smell of that was at least three miles away. You could smell it. We parked up and we had to wait while they parlayed, and I think after a couple of days they agreed to move beyond the river and beyond the bridge, and we went up. But all our blankets were changed. We were smothered in DDT. The people came up and smothered us with this white powder.
And this from just having been near it?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Did you realise what was going on there at all at the time?
Not really. I think the magnitude of it came when you could look over the horizon, and I think I remember seeing probably the biggest convoy of ambulances I think I've ever seen. You know, they're nose to tail. But through binoculars you couldn't see much at all, really. But it all came over the radio where it was. In fact, I think eventually they put the flamethrowers in there to raise it, flatten it off.
So, from there, any other incidents? How were you getting on with any German civilians you met, as opposed to...
Well, that business with the officer cadets near there was a camp, and we actually went in it, and... obviously they'd cleared it, but all the huts had these models of landscapes and similar to what we had at Catering in many ways. And a German civilian was telling us where they'd buried some of their equipment. Whether he wanted it or not, I don't know, but we all got a sort of camouflage jacket out of it. They were not anti at all. Perhaps some were a bit sullen, but when we pulled up, we moved into a house, and they'd still be there. I mean, I remember one woman showing us all her fruit, and she had a big larder at the back, and there were jars and jars of bottled fruit. Because we always thought that the fruit was in syrup, but it wasn't. I mean, it was in like water, but that's what they used to stock up. So they seemed to be quite well off. But country people are better off than town people, that's for sure, most usually. But No great animosity at all. Of course, the culmination came with the big belt up to Vivek.
What do you remember of that?
Ooh, going up the Autobahn, flat out up there, right across the Autobahn. Exhilarating, I suppose, would be the best word.
Would you still have your governors on?
I wouldn't like to say they don't. We were running flat out, that's for sure. Going like the proverbial clappers, it was exhilarating.
And it's actually on the motorway?
On the Autobahn, yeah. And just outside there, a big, a Blommen Voss, I think, had a, they built all manner of things, including big aircraft, and a big four-engine aircraft took off, a German aircraft took off, and we saw it going, and the way it was going, I couldn't imagine, because we then found that the Russians were just the other side of Lübeck. So they didn't have anywhere to go, but it obviously was moving somebody of importance, but I never found out who. But it was a big four engine thing, but it and I'm sure it was from the Blommen Voss yards, or the aircraft place there. Lübeck, well, it was strange because we ended up in Lübeck. And I wonder how they had like red crosses and things on roofs and the like. But we parked up on a big common on the edge of the houses, and the German troops were coming in like battalions, all marching in, and they're just dumping their rifles. And
is this after VE Day then?
No, it's before. This is when, because Lübeck was an open city, about the last one to fall, and they were marching in because the Russians were just the other side, and so they had nowhere to go. They showed that, I suppose, but and all manner of vehicles were being used to bring them in, including a fire engine. I remember they were swarmed all over this thing. Horse and carts, you name it. And all the vehicles, we got them to park them up on the green. And a most motley arrangement of vehicles you never wish to see. It was incredible. But they were marching in, just throwing their arms down, and God knows where they went. I mean, that's what the infantry that followed us up and took them off somewhere. But also, there were ex-prisoners of war running about in there, that, because we were brewing up, and God, we got rid of more tea than enough with these people. I mean, they were flitting about, picking up arms, and they were looking for their ex-guards. Whether they found them or not, I don't know. I wouldn't give much for their chances if they did, that's for sure. But they'd come up, and they couldn't recognise our uniforms in many ways, because some of these chaps had been captured in 1940, and things were pretty very normal. But they were running about, arming themselves off, and then tearing off to sort of try and find these guards that had marched them back. But all the prisoners of war were being marched back as we moved forward. And I mean, on one occasion, I think, I'm going back a little bit, but three or four chaps came running down the track. I'd left my tank and was going back to the squadron, which was about 150 yards back. And down this track came these four chaps running, hollering and shouting, and they were Air Force. And I looked around, and they were waving their arms and running like mad. And evidently, they'd been up in the trees. They saw us arrive, and they couldn't make out who we were. And they were trying to listen for the voices. And when they heard English being sort of spoken, then they showed themselves and came running down. But that, to them, I mean, it was a great unit. They'd actually slipped out of a group that was being marched back from a camp. The sequel to that is that one of the people that the reunion is one of those back then, and I'm looking forward to sort of meeting him. In breakfast, they told us they'd been up there for hours trying to listen to the voices, and when they come to the conclusion it was British, they run down. They were moved back to HQ. But I remember somebody telling me that one of them wanted to continue with us, and there was no room on the tank, obviously, for them, but he must have been mad, that one, but they were shipped back. But I look forward to meeting that one.
Anything else before the surrender?
Lubeck, evidently we got into the warehouses around Lubeck, and that evidently held, well, we all got bottles of brandy and all the goodies that were sitting in these warehouses.
Is that looted or just...
Shall we say that the doors fell off after somebody backed into them? Yes, relieved, I suppose, would be the...
Would people be getting drunk, or...?
Not at that point, no. I think you had too much adrenaline going to sort of get you go at that. But it was nice to have it in stock, because by then the end was in the summer.
Could you... I mean, did you really realise it, that the war had a matter of months or weeks or days to go?
Days, then, because you... linking up with Russia just the other side there, and it was all running out. I mean, even the civilians had given up, I'm sure. I think the saddest thing towards the end there was the last casualty we had was Corporal Bush. That one was sad, because he'd done it all. And
how was he killed? Was he killed? Or?
Yes, he was. Yeah, his tank was hit, and I think he was hit on his way out as he got out. And I didn't know it until fairly recently that Roy Valance was the one that helped bury him. And he's actually got a photograph of his grave. But that one, yeah, a lot of the people that I lost, I think I mourn for him more. With his two daughters and the rest of it.
What had happened? Did you see the action in which he was hit? Was it a bazooka or what was it? Did you find?
No, I didn't see him hit. No. We obviously wouldn't have been far away. We heard on the radio that somebody's gone down, as it were. But no, I didn't see it. And then they said that the casualty was quite a bush. But I thought that one was sad. Prior to that, we had there was an accident when we lathered up. As one of them, somebody got out of the turret, they kicked the firing mechanism and they ran up the main breach. And that fired it. And the shot was the loudest bang I think I've ever heard. Because the shot hit a tree, a big tree. And it split this tree. The split went up yards, up travelled up the trunk. That probably was part of the noise that you heard. Unfortunately, it killed one, and the co-driver of the tank that was nearest, he was injured, and I knew him. I can even almost tell you his name now. It was a bloke called Sidaway, from Brummagem, I think, and he'd already been wounded once somewhere, in the past, and he was crying, getting out the co-driver's seat when this thing went off. But I think one of the others was killed on that. Yeah, they got one up the breach of it. Oh. But Lubeck, we pulled out of Lubeck, harboured up, and the order came not to take any risks for the next 24 hours. I can clearly remember that. And that's probably the time we got stuck into the brandy or whatever. 24 hours, and that was it. It was all over.
And what about any V-Day celebrations or, victory celebrations? Do you remember them?
Yeah, we fired off some very lights and what have you. A few bursts into the air, but no more than that.
Was there any sort of party? Or had you drunk all the booze?
There was still some booze left. There was still sort of stuff about. Somebody ordered something tapped up for, you know, people to drag out.
And how did you feel in yourself that it was all well?
Relief, I guess. It must have been, that finished, you know. One other incident was worth mentioning. We were going down these houses, and it was such a noisy action taking place. And the co-driver, you can ask him when you see him, old in. He said, it won't be a minute, he called out. And with that, he dived out at the comet, and he ran over to what would be a shop. And on the shelves, very high, were bottles. And he dived into the shop and he took a couple of these bottles, stuck them under his arm, and he came in head first. He dived into this quite head first with these bottles. Cool that I got, you know. Great. Well, we opened one of these bottles. It was vinegar. You're all that effort for vinegar. You know, if you ever see Olin, you ask him. Well. But their little highlights, really, those sort of things. The celebrations went on. Till you got, you know, just sort of spun out. But it was, we then moved up towards the Danish border.
Is this at Bredsted?
Bredsted, yeah, that's right, Bredsted. We harboured up there, and in a little village, took over a street in the village. A lovely little, nice thing, you know. Lovely little town.
What sort of billets were you in?
In a house. The troop took over the house. Lovely country.
What about the non-fraternisation? Did that affect you?
Well, when we got up there, the first lot was the troops coming back from Denmark. They were marching down. Some say they were marching, they were usually singing, marching against England and all that rubbish, but... they looked a bit choked, I suppose. We watched them come through, and then at night they billeted them in a big house. And there was even the women with them in this part that they marked out. But they few remarks being bantered about, but I can remember them singing. It's typical of them singing, but they told me that that's what they were singing when marching against England. But it's a bit late for that. But then up there we used to do patrols with the comets around the area. And
what were you doing them for?
Oh, just prowling around, because there was curfews, of course, on the...
Were you actually in the tank, or were you...?
Yeah, we actually took the comets out and scattered about. But if anybody was out, you could hear these things coming miles away, so you just laid doggo, you know. No doubt there was a lot of movement of civilian movement about, but I think that was really a token gesture. Really.
And what about this, non-fraternisation? Was it enforced?
I don't know. I don't think it needed to be, because you kept yourself to yourself, and the civilians kept themselves to themselves. We barried off the road, top and bottom of the road, so they couldn't walk through it. But they walk along the end of it. They obviously give you a look, but might even get a smile out of them or two. But generally, they weren't particularly pleased that you were there, I guess. But they didn't show it. I had a good grace not to show it very much.
And did you have any other duties other than the curfew patrols?
Not really. No. It was the weather was lovely. We got the tanks ready then, and we handed them over. They were handed over, taken to Berlin. So we even lost those.
So you had no tanks at all. Yeah. Were you worried about the prospect before then of being sent out to the Far East? Because I mean, the war was still out there.
Yeah, that's right. No, it didn't sort of didn't come up until they merged the first. Fourth and fourth into the second, and it would seem that all the young ones from the second went to the first, and all the older ones from the first went to the second. So they made up the first. it was then that they said it was preparing for the landings in Japan. The first we trained with flamethrowers, Churchill flamethrowers, there for a short period.
So you were posted to the first. Mm-hmm. Well, when was that? Do you remember what month?
It could have been very long after Bredstadt that we got out there. Once the comets had gone, it was very rapid after that. So it was within three weeks or so, I would think.
So June-ish.
Mm, I would think so.
And how did you find the first in comparison to the second? Any differences?
Not a great deal, no, they were billeted outside Hanover. And then we did the practicing outside on the heath outside there.
What was these flamethrowers like? What tank were they on? And
they had a trailer that held 300 gallons of this. The best I can describe it is like a solution. If you've mended your old cycle tires with that, it's sticky. And it had, I think it had about 300 gallons in this trailer. And a big pipe came through the back of the tank, or along the floor, to a nozzle, which would be in like the co-driver's seat. The nozzle had an SU pump, electric petrol pump, that would meter petrol onto the shot. When you pulled the trigger, this rubber solution was pressurised and it pushed it through to the nozzle. You pulled the trigger and you got this wedge of rubber solution with the petrol trickling onto the top of it. You also had like an ignition switch that then gave it the spark to ignite it. You could fire what they call wet shots. If you turn the ignition off, you could then fire shots. Pulling the trigger, you've got a stream of this come out. So when you released it, you've got this, like a pencil, going through the air, as you call it, a wet shot. There was no ignition to it. So you could punch that through a window, a house, put two or three shots through it, and then the next one you ignite it, and that would set the whole lot going. Or blockhouse, you could fire the shots through that, if you got close enough. Their range wasn't very long, not very good.
About what?
150 yards, I should think.
And did they have a proper gun as well?
Yeah, they'd run up in the turret. But
so it was an extra?
That was 6 pounds, I suppose.
And what about machine gun?
They had that in the turret, but they didn't have it down in the code, obviously. You know, that was taken up with this nozzle contraption.
And what were you fire on?
That.
You were on that, not in the turret then?
Yeah, fired that.
And what did you think of it as a weapon?
Ugly, nasty, and a Churchill wouldn't much do. I would say most would feel the same. It was lumbering, slow. One thing, it had a lot of room. You'd always walk about in it in places, but it wouldn't. We've been used to scuttling about in something fast and to get into something that lumbered. I mean, if you were driving it to get from first to second, I mean, you had to go through that box like grease lightning. Otherwise, the resistance of the tracks would stop before you managed to get it back into gear. It was, it wasn't my cup of tea at all, that one.
And how did you get on? You got on reasonably well with your fellows there. I presume there was a fair number of your old second people.
Yeah, that's right, really. You know, you tended to sort of mix with the others. You all get thrown in together, really. There were familiar faces.
But the unit doesn't seem to have been markedly different from the second, ethos of it.
No, at all.
And what about this going to the Far East? Did that worry last long, or were you not even aware of it?
We knew about it before we actually got there. That's what we mooted. That's one of the reasons why we we were going down there trying to pick up these flamethrowers to play with those. You knew that, I mean, the Japanese sort of makeup, it wasn't going to be an easy landing wherever it took place, so that's for sure. I mean, all the indications led you to believe that, me telling it, but that's what it was, and that's the way it was going to be.
You just took it as another part of a rotten job, I guess, that bit. I don't think anybody looked forward to it, that's for sure.